transfer business was?
Yes. Yeah, he used to have him take his equipment around for him. And
what kind of business was he in?
Well, he would do cement work and paper hanging and carpenter work. Well, he was good at all three. He was a good cement contractor. When it come to cement work, well, that's when we'd do hauling for him.
Mm-hmm.
But never got any money out of him for doing it.
Kind of didn't pay his bills, huh?
So I should have had sense enough then to know that socialism wasn't right. Because it talk on, it's all against the rich, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Swap the rich and make them pay up. Well, that's the way people think now. That's the way the labor unions think.
All
industries making too much profit. Look at the profit they're making. We got to have more wages. Well, if they didn't make profit, they wouldn't be in business.
They wouldn't have any money to keep changing machines and products and expanding and doing this, that, and the other either.
Well, of course they wouldn't. Now, these labor leaders are parasites. Now, they're going to kill the goose that's laying the golden eggs, and they don't know it.
Yeah, it sure seems so.
You know, parasite has got to have something, some productive person to live on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just running themselves out of a job. Won't be long. They're going to bring industry to a standstill, and they won't have anybody to...
I want to hear a little bit more about your socialism. Did you give talks down at City Hall Square?
Yes, City Hall Square, and out in...
Did you ever have any interesting experiences in taking the soapbox?
No. Keep a little lesson, but you wouldn't hear any comments.
Nobody threw any tomatoes at you?
No. They'd listen, but no comments. They wasn't too interested to get interested in it, so I don't blame them. So the labor unions right now are gonna bring business to a standstill. This country today can't do any exporting because of the high cost of labor and material.
Mm-hmm. Kind of priced ourselves out of the world market.
Yeah, pricing ourselves right out of the world market. So socialism is gonna be a detriment to the economy of this country. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the only thing that's going to bring about peace and goodwill among men, and it's the only thing that's going to bring about fairness between capital and labor. There's too much selfishness in the world today. People that have not, but they want to take from them that have. There's nothing fair about it. Well, where do we go from here now? What are we going to talk about now?
Well, let's talk about your meeting Mother. What's your version of that?
Well, I used to go there to buy the groceries so I could get in contact with Florence. And one day I got up gumption enough to ask her if she would go to a show with me. And so she said she would. I was sure grateful for that.
Well, now, going to a show in those days wasn't a movie, was it?
No, it wasn't movies.
The
Orpheum. We'd go to the Orpheum.
And this was a live play on stage?
Yes, they'd have... they had a... what do you call it?
Vaudeville
program on every week, once a week. And sure had good stuff on there. Well, they had all kinds of talent.
Seems to me like we went to some good movies, but I don't remember the name.
Serious plays as well?
Yes, we went to good plays too. They'd have good plays there at the Orpheum. I remember when I was a boy, we used to go to the Orpheum and see, what's the name of that show? where the she went over the ice in the wintertime.
Uncle Tom's cabin?
Yeah, Uncle Tom's cabin. And another one, Massachusetts play, where this woman had a legitimate child, and she was... nobody had any sympathy for her at all. She was an outcast. What is the name of that play?
I can't remember, but I know it was good plays like that that we went to.
Yeah, those are the kind of plays we used to see.
They were good.
Used to pay 2 bits up in the gallery at the Orpheum Theater to go and see a play.
25 cents each, huh?
You didn't take me up in the gallery.
I was just a boy then. That's speaking of in our boyhood days. Yeah, we had the best seats then.
What'd you have to pay for the seats when you took Mom?
No, they wasn't expensive. I don't think they was over 50 cents a piece for the best seats.
Now, how would you get there? Would you walk to the show and walk home?
We'd take a streetcar and walk.
The rest well, of... period. I didn't want any of my beautiful girls to see me with you.
I tell you, what, Florence used to be staying at Bill Coop's. And I said, you don't have to stay here. You can, why don't you move out with your mother out on West 12th Street?
I didn't think he'd come and see
me
way out there.
And I says, oh, you used to come there to meet me. I says, I don't have to, I don't, it's not necessary that I meet you here at Bill's. I'll go down to your home and get you. Down to Marriott.
Golly, he must like to come and get me to go way out there.
So I used to ride the streetcar to 12th Street and then walk down there.
And
get her.
Night before the cars got stopped running, just in time.
Yeah. Take the car to 12th Street and Washington Avenue, and then we'd walk down to Florence's at Broom's Bench. I'd leave there about midnight and walk home along the railroad tracks to 28th Street. So I was in love, wasn't I?
You must have been.
I sure was.
Where did you propose to Mom?
Yeah, see, you can tell that one. I told him. Bet you can't remember.
No, I don't remember that one.
You didn't propose?
I know I got the ring put down your finger, didn't I?
That's all. Just asking her
anything. Oh, you could read her mind anyway, couldn't you, Pop?
Yeah.
You knew she'd marry you. She put a ring on her finger.
He's too darn sure of himself, but if I'd have told it, Annie.
Is it the same ring you're still wearing?
Yes, same ring.
Well, you've had it a long time.
It won't come off.
I got a diamond ring for her, and she turned it in on that deal we made on the property in Marriott.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. I wanted a home more than I wanted a
from 15th and Jefferson to Marriott.
I say I wanted a home more than I wanted a diamond ring. To me, diamonds are just showing off anyway.
What kind of a diamond was this that you bought for Mom?
It was a good one.
Yes, it was a good diamond. It cost $65. I guess
damn.
It was a pretty good diamond ring at that time.
How many carats?
Gosh, I don't remember.
It'd be twice that much money now, I guess.
It must have been a real good one because I only paid $55 for the one I bought out of Rose.
Uh-huh, that was,
it was a good one.
$65 ring.
It had been a lot better then. For the money.
So it was a long time getting married, but I think it has paid off.
It was worth waiting for, huh?
Worth waiting for. What if I had married out of the church?
30 years old in 10 years we had 5 boys.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
Sherry and Michael Thing, they're all nice boys too.
When they're 18 and don't have any more than that.
They're all good boys and were raised up in the church. And that's the main thing. Born under the covenant. They've all done well. All holy church offices in the church.
You have a black sheep in the whole church.
I'm not a black sheep in the whole bunch. Talbot says that he thinks that being in Virginia is where the Lord wants him to be.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he can do a lot there in Virginia.
I hadn't felt that way about it, but he convinced me. He said, that's where I'm needed.
Let's find out.
About going out to Carl and his dad.
Let's find out what you worked at. You say you were working for your dad at the time you got married?
Yes.
But then you went in. You went to Fort Lewis, Washington right away, didn't you?
Went to Fort Lewis, Washington on August the 28th, 1918.
What do you remember about that?
Well, we had intensive training, and I was put in the motorized ammunition train. And we had Nash trucks, and these Nash trucks were four-wheel drives, but they had solid tires all around.
Mm-hmm.
You know how hard it is for any vehicle to get through mud with solid rubber tires. And they trained us in infantry training with a rifle, and they also trained us in mechanics of the motor and had us drive these trucks. I was in Company A of the ammunition train.
Mm-hmm.
Now this ammunition train was half motorized and half horse-drawn vehicles.
Mm.
So when we never did get out of Camp Lewis. We were in the, was the 91st Division, completely made up and ready to go. Then the armistice came, November the 11th, 1918, so we didn't get to go over.
You was in bed with the flu anyway, you couldn't have gone.
I had the flu for about 30 days. Took down with the flu and was in the hospital there.
Hmm.
Couldn't write home or anything. I don't. Did they notify you that I was sick? They did, huh?
Well,
they used to put a bottle of whiskey or a glass of whiskey on my table every day, and I wouldn't drink it, and they'd have to take it away.
And so that's all that carried people with whiskey.
So the nurse one day says, well, that's another drink for me. I don't know if she was getting it every day or not, but this one day she said, that's another drink for me. So I know she liked her drinks. Well, when I got to feeling better, I thought, well, I'll write a letter home. Write a letter to Florence. I put my elbow on the table and got my pencil in hand to write, and boy, that was all for that day.
The flu.
I was just completely exhausted just from that little exertion.
Hmm.
I had to lay down all the rest of it that day.
Hmm.
And then I think the next day I was able to write a letter.
Hmm.
At first try I couldn't do it. I'm exhausted.
What part of Washington was Camp Lewis in? Was it near any of the big cities?
Camp Lewis is near Tacoma.
Hmm.
I know they used to go up there to Tacoma on weekends, but I never did. Go up there.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed in camp.
Mm-hmm.
One day I failed to look at the bulletin board and I was called to go on KP. Well, of course, not looking on the bulletin board, I didn't know it. And we're out on the drill field doing our calisthenics, our ups and downs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here come a guy out from headquarters with a rifle on his shoulder. Took me back to camp. So took me back to camp and had to finish out on KP. I wasn't satisfied with that for not looking on the bulletin board. I had KP the next day. So gosh, I didn't know what to make of that. Well, I used to take a man to take him to his meals. Who was an objector.
Conscientious objector?
Conscientious objector. He says that the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. So he wouldn't fight. So I took this man to his meals from his barracks where they kept him to his meals every day for a couple of weeks.
Did they keep them locked up or what?
No, he wasn't locked up. I don't know whether they probably had him working at something.
Why did you have to take him to his meals?
I don't know. I thought he needed to be guarded. He was very... I don't think he would have needed to be guarded.
Mm-hmm.
It's just his convictions. One day I went after him and the captain, another officer, was talking to him and the captain slapped him in the face, slapped him both cheeks.
Hmm.
I'm like, gosh, I don't think you should be doing that. That's awful cruel. And when I'd take him down, well, the guys would razz him, you know,
mm-hmm.
the guys in the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they'd have taught him proper, given him an understanding that it wasn't wrong to kill when people were come against you, you know,
mm-hmm.
take your rights and your liberties away from you, I believe if they'd have taught him those things, well, he'd understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether they taught him anything or not. I didn't have time to tell him anything.
Mm-hmm.
He had to march ahead of me. Couldn't march alongside him. He had to be ahead of me, me behind him, the gun on my shoulder,
mm-hmm.
without any bullets in it.
How did you find the Army life? Was it hard on you, or could... You were pretty strong physically, weren't you?
Yes, I could go along all right with it. I could go through all the ordeals.
You got through the flu.
Yeah. Yeah, I was always pretty well physically strong. You've got to be strong if you've got to work in the transfer business. I done some heavy lifting. I know generally I used to have to get on the bottom of the piano going upstairs.
You were on the bottom end.
I went upstairs, I had to get on the bottom end of it to push it.
Not a man built strong enough to do that nowadays, Dad. they'd use a winch or something.
Yeah, they'd use something else besides the physical part of it. They do things with machines nowadays. They'd lift it up through a window or some way to get it up there. I remember I took a piano up over Smith's Business College one time. And those stairs were winding.
Spiral staircase?
Yeah. And sharp curves. My, that was a tough job getting that piano up there.
Were you on the bottom end?
Yeah, I was on the bottom end of it.
Well, how many guys would there be on a piano to take one up?
Just two.
Just two?
Just two of you, that's all.
Well, what would a piano weigh?
Oh, I guess it'd weigh 600 or 700 pounds. Upright pianos are sure heavy.
You can win a weightlifting contest.
They can make a piano today, you know, just as good as them uprights. Weighs half as much, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
These spinets, I guess that's all they make nowadays, isn't it? Just about.
Just about. Well, certainly, most of the pianos they sell are certainly small like that.
They're just as good as the big ones. You'd have trouble in the with the piano tipping. You know, all the weight is right in the back of the piano.
Mm-hmm.
There's practically no weight on the front of it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Hard job to keep them from tipping over. So these spinets, these small ones, they're not so tall. There's no trouble, wouldn't be any trouble at all to handle them.
Well, now, you were quite familiar with these Jewish businessmen on 25th Street in those days, weren't you?
Yes. But they didn't want to talk religion. They were very friendly with us. We done all their hauling on them. All the merchants on 25th Street, we done all their transfer work for them.
Uh-huh.
Got along with them very well. I had one Jew talk to me one day. He was going with me to get some freight. And he talked to me about the virgin birth of Christ. And I told him all about it. And his birth by Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I just talked to him for a few minutes. He says, well, he says, that's all right, but I can't talk to you anymore. Can't talk to you anymore. So I told him that Jesus Christ was divine, that he was the Son of God. He was the only begotten of the Father in the flesh. He said, well, that's all right, that's all right. I can't talk to you anymore. So I guess he was kind of sorry that he'd asked me any questions, the way he acted about it.
How did these Jewish businessmen get on 25th Street? What drew them to Ogden?
They generally work in, as a rule, a small one-man business store, one-man business that way. They come along those streets, and you'll find them in most every town.
When did they come to Ogden? At the time of the railroad?
Yes, they came in with the railroads. But they open all hours, and they're working on work. They're open on Sundays, and they're open late evenings. They're practically open all the time. They live right in the rear of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the Jews that are big businessmen.
Yeah.
And you find them in R.L. Samuels. That must be a Jewish establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do a wonderful business. And their establishments are really up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the best of fixtures and everything. I don't know about Bon Marché. I don't know if they're Jews in that or not.
You used to imitate, seems to me, when I was a kid, or you did on occasion, some of these Jewish, the way they would talk and fit you with a suit or something. Do you remember how that goes?
Oh, yeah, then put a suit on a man, then button it up in front, and then draw it in the back with their fingers, say, well, it fits you just like the paper on the wall. So they have a way about them in selling. They're very good salesmen. Tell you a story about a 25th Street Jew. A man went into the store to buy a coat. And this fellow was a tramp. He didn't intend to pay for it. And the looking glass was up in the front of the store. So he told him to go and take a look at himself in the glass, see how he liked the coat and how it fit him. So instead of stopping to look at himself in the glass, well, he went right on out the door. And the Jew said, went outside, he says, police, police, police. He says, shoot that man in the pants. He says, the coat is mine.
Seems to me at a ward reunion or a ward party once that you put on a little act or something, Jewish businessman's act. Do you remember that out at Lawrence Park?
Oh, yeah. I remember now. We had a play there from the 18th Ward, wasn't it?
Think so.
I don't remember. Gosh, it's been so long, I've forgotten all about it. Well, I didn't tell you about my railroad experience when the war came on. After the war, then I went railroading again.
Which war are we talking about?
I said after the war, didn't I?
Uh-huh. World War I?
World War II. During World War II, I went to work, and before, I went to work at the Ogden Arsenal. They had closed it down. They built it in 1921. But they had closed it down. They just opened it up again. And I went to work there as a hostler. And then that was 1936. That was during the WPA days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on firing. And fired there until 1940 when I went over to Hill Fields. And went on there as a brakeman. Then they wanted me to go on firing at the arsenal again. I went back firing there, and then I got on as an engineer on the Arsenal Railroad. Worked on the Arsenal Railroad till December 1945, when they cut down from 14 engines to 2 engines.
Mm-hmm.
I got laid off. I thought I was sitting pretty there till the time I retired. In December 1945, I got laid off from the railroad. And then February the 6th, 1946, I went to work at the Utah General Depot in the labor pool,
mm-hmm.
loading and unloading cars. When I got off the engine at the arsenal, I weighed 145 pounds. Started to work out there at the labor pool, loading and unloading cars at the Utah General Depot, and went down from 145 pounds to 120.
Hard work.
Yeah, and took sick. I was sick in bed for a couple of weeks.
Hmm.
Then the labor pool sent me to work at Warehouse 6, I think it was the name of the warehouse. Anyhow, it was for the engineers. So they kept me there, and I never did have to report back at the labor pool.
Mm-hmm.
They kept me right there. I registered in there morning and night on the time clock, and had me taking examination for a packer. So they sent for me, and the personnel, I guess it was, personnel office, said, "Well, you passed the examination as a packer, okay. You passed the examination, fine, but in order to put you on regular, as a regular packer, we'll have to reduce your pay to 91 cents an hour, I think it was." I says, "No, I won't. I'm able to do the work, and I don't think that I should be required to start in at a reduction in pay." I says, "No, I don't want to go on regular. You just let me stay as I am." So in about 90 days, I took another examination, and they put me on permanent role.
Hmm.
So I was on permanent from that time on till I left in March 1954 when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
It hurt my back from lifting, and they sort of thought it desirable to retire me.
Hmm.
I was 67 years old then. So I've been retired, this is 59, I've been retired 5 years now from Utah General Depot.
What did you work at after you got back from Camp Lewis up until 1945?
Oh, I worked to 1924 for Dad, and then I went to tried the insurance business for a year.
Metropolitan
Insurance, and I couldn't make a living at that. Then I went to work for the, what dairy was it? To Nelson Rich Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sold out, worked for Cloverleaf Dairy, and then they sold out for Sunfreeze, Arden's Ice Cream. That's called the Meadow Gold Dairy now.
Mm-hmm.
Meadow Gold Products. And from there I went to the arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, we went to the farm there. Were you working?
I was working for, was I working for Dad? No, I was working for the dairy at that time. I was working for the dairy when we moved from.
When we moved to the farm?
When we moved to the farm.
That was about Depression time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was 1927. We were there from 1937 to 1934.
Let's see, we moved...
1927.
We moved to the farm. What time of the year in 1927?
September 1927.
Just in time to get in school, I guess, huh?
Yes.
And then in 1934?
We moved to 30th Street.
Now, what time of the year was that? That was winter, wasn't it? Or was it?
No, I believe it was good weather when we moved in there. Summertime, I believe.
Was it summertime?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me I can remember burning tires or wood or something as kids while you went in with that old Ford panel truck that you had to run with a choke out or it wouldn't run.
That's the one we got off of...
Bingham.
Del Bingham. And he didn't have title to it when he sold it to me.
He didn't.
No. Had to get the title fixed up after we got back here, after we moved over on 30th Street.
What automobiles did you have during your life there after you got married? What was the first one that you got?
Model T.
What year did you get that?
Oh, got that about 1925, I guess.
Did we have one of those when you moved to the farm?
Yeah, we did.